3, 2, 1. Download the future.
Hello and welcome to Replay, the monthly community podcast for the gamer scene, where we revisit the titles from 2 years ago. Today is Sunday, the 28th of February, 2010, and our feature game this month is The Orange Box. I'm Zan Tyriad, better known as Zan, and it's my pleasure to introduce you to this show this month. And joining me, we have Strident from the forums. Welcome, Strident.
Hi there.
Now, unfortunately, Knockon was hoping to make it as well, but he's come down with some sort of dreadful man flu of some kind. So hopefully he's, you know, we wish him well, hope he gets better soon. And he's promised us he's going to leave his comments on the forum for everyone to read, so look out for that in the coming weeks. Now we're going to start off, as we did last month, with a kind of retro review of a feature year from the last 10 years. So we're now on to 2001, and Strident and I were having a quick look pre-show at 2001, and my God, that was a stellar year. But Strident, what games stand out for you from 2001?
Oh, I mean, one reason that 2001 sticks in the head for me is I just started a new job, and I was spending a lot of time in the office on PC. So I really got into my console gaming in 2001, because the last thing I wanted to do was come home and sit playing on the PC after sitting on the PC all day. So I mean, there's just so many different choices on the PS2, the Xbox. But I mean, start with one on the Game Boy Advance. It was the year I think we saw Advance Wars come out from Nintendo, which was a great turn-based strategy, very cartoony, very bright, but a great turn-based strategy game. It reminded me a lot of the old Rebel Star Raiders type games on the Speccy and things like that. I really, really loved Advance Wars.
Yeah, me too. I remember when I bought that, I was actually commuting to Bristol every day and then getting a bus halfway across the city. And I used to actually take the slowest bus route, so I could spend the most time playing Advance Wars on the bus. Yeah, it's fantastic. Fantastic game. You're right, Rebel Star was very similar. And even things like UFO Enemy Unknown and things like that are kind of similar concept, that kind of turn-based.
I mean, I've always struggled with the real-time strategy, but I really, really love the turn-based strategy. It was pretty much perfect. I mean, they went on to do different versions, another one on the Game Boy Advance, I think, and then a couple on the DS with the two screens and things. But, I mean, I think you still can't beat the very first Advance Wars.
No, indeed. Looking down the list is incredible, actually. I can't believe, you know, often people talk about 1998 as being one of the best years. Just looking at this year, this must be right up there, because I'll come clean, I'm looking at a list on Wikipedia, but as you said, we've got things like Grand Theft Auto 3, which was a huge game. I mean, a benchmark title, really. That spawned many sequels and many derivative games from it, hasn't it? It was kind of the first genuine open world, real life city that you could explore and feel. Yeah, incredible. And we got Halo, the very first Halo, Combat Evolved. Pikmin, another one that's another strategy game that was made for the consoles. I mean, Max Payne, another seminal title. Ico. I mean, the list goes on and on, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, that's without even throwing in, you know, your normal sequels, like things like SSX Tricky, which was a good game in its own right. You've got Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3, Dead or Alive, if you're into that thing, Dead or Alive 3, and Metal Gear Solid 2 came out in 2001, which was my first experience of the Metal Gear Solid series on the PS2 that I'd just bought, I think, if not that year, the year before, which was a great game. Of course, not playing the Metal Gear Solid series prior to that, I wasn't that upset about Snake not really being in it that much.
Raiden.
But I mean, I remember playing that for hours and actually getting to the end, completing it, and watching the cutscene at the end for hours as well. But I mean, that is a good game. And also, I mean, things on, you said Max Payne on the PC, things like Return to Castle Wolfenstein, which I enjoyed quite a bit on the PC as well.
Yeah, it's just an amazing lineup. So yes, well worth having a look at that. Actually, probably we can put a link in the show notes. But it's basically, if you on Wikipedia, if you search for 2001 in video gaming, then you'll find that list, and it's quite something. I have to say though, of all of the games that came out the year, the one I played by far the most was Baldur's Gate: Dark Alliance on the PS2, which was kind of similar to the Marvel Ultimate Alliance games. And you could do two-player co-op on that. And I remember, I think I've played through that game about four or five times with various mates, or on my own, or with my wife as well. I love that game. But yeah, fantastic year. And quite topically as well, according to this list, right at the end of the year, we had Final Fantasy X. And I believe Final Fantasy XIII is basically the game that team has made next. So, yeah, amazing.
It is.
Right, so without further ado, let's actually talk about our game of the month for this month. As usual, we normally ask one of the member of the podcast team to read out the or describe the box. I'm afraid, as it's only you, Trident, it's you this time. So,
I normally end up doing it anyway, yeah. But in my own inept way. Well, I mean, the game of the month was The Orange Box, and it is an orange box, basically. It's the most bizarre piece of artwork, I think. It just looks like something, you know, a Key Stage 2 computer club has put together. It really is a weird... It's a very strange package to be released on the consoles anyway, which I think we'll probably go into later. But it's basically three pictures connected to three of the games on it. You've got Gordon Freeman, you've got a little logo from Portal, and you've got one of the heavies from Team Fortress 2. And it's just a list of the games that are on it, basically, in orange at the bottom. It's not a great box art. It's one that relies on the familiar names that are listed on it for people to pick it up and buy, I think.
I seem to remember when it came out, I think it was maybe on like a one-up podcast or something like that. I remember them really taking the piss out of the box and saying it's one of the worst box art designs they'd ever seen. So yeah, I quite agree. It doesn't really entice you to buy it. It kind of assumes that you know what these things are. Which I guess brings me on to what we're doing is describe what the game is, and the best way to describe it is to say it's not a game at all. It's a compilation and a curious collection at that. So you've got basically, this was originally Half-Life 2 Episode 2, that's right, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then they decided to expand on that and include Half-Life 2 Episode 1, so that Half-Life 2 Episode 2 made sense. They then added Half-Life 2 to the mix as well, because that had already been previously released, so I guess that was fairly easy for them to on the consoles anyway, for them to add as well. They then acquired a developer who had produced a game called, was it Vernacular? No, was
it Vernacular Drop? Something Vernacular like that,
Drop,
isn't it?
Yeah, which they basically hired those guys who'd made Vernacular Drop using the Half-Life 2 engine and repackaged it and rebranded it as Portal, which was basically a physics-based, I suppose, partially physics-based, physics and dimension-based puzzle game.
It's Valve, everything's physics-based.
Yeah, but this yeah, so it's physics-based and kind of dimension-based, wasn't it? Probably the best way to describe it. So, yeah, it's effectively operating in 3D space and time. And then Team Fortress 2, which is really, again, built on the Source engine, the Half-Life 2 engine, which was a online-only, quite sophisticated multiplayer game. So it's an odd collection of games, really.
It's very much a selection box, isn't it, I think?
Yeah, so Forrest Gump quotes come to mind, but yeah, indeed, yeah. And curious that they would bundle them all together like that. You know, in terms of value, it's probably the best value package, you know, game package you'd ever buy, because you're effectively getting five games in one, but just an odd combination. So we've got some comments on the forum. So Striden, do you want to take the first one for us?
Yeah, this is from Kung Fu. I call it. Oh, why am I even saying it? Kung Fu Fuse. Oh dear. This one's from Kung Fu Stew. He said, I spent a few hours playing last night. I got to the point in the game, still the basic Half-Life 2, where you get AI control squad mates who follow you like a shadow and block you into small rooms. I spent quite a lot of time screaming at the idiots to get out of the way. I just wish they could hear me. What's even more annoying is that they keep apologising for getting in the way. He just feels, basically, that the game all felt a little bit dated, and he knows that there's obviously a reason for this. He's not had a numerical readout for his health and armor in years, and the large digits in the corner of the screen felt like a huge distraction. He said he's also got very used to the auto health recovery that modern games use, and he says, I'm sure we've all developed the tactic of taking out an enemy while soaking up a little damage, then recovering before facing the next opponent. That strategy doesn't really work in old school games, as the total health in a level is limited. All in all, it's not the worst shooter ever, he says, and I'm sure it's in its time it was an amazing game. I just don't think it stands up at all well against the top titles of today.
So I've got a comment from Sir Stewie. He says, so much negativity. I think it's important. I should just caveat that by saying that there were a few posts on the forum of people saying how they didn't like Half-Life, but they didn't really explain why. So Stewie wrote, there's so much negativity. I think it's important to remember that Half-Life 2 is a late 2004 game rather than a late 2007 game, and it shows in abundance on the filler selections. But the controls, physics, storytelling were all stunning at the time and have aged well. My only gripe is that the non-regenerating health can leave you with problems occasionally, mine being the bit with the chopper that removes cover whilst having 18 health points at the checkpoint. Yeah, I have a comment about that. Portal may only be a 2 to 4 hour game that's extremely linear, with a story playing out identically every time, but I played it through twice on release and second time to pick up on all the GLaDOS muttering and hints. In addition, I played it again in 2008 and 2009 and will most likely get an urge to try it again later this year. So I can't complain about replayability, as it's like a movie I can watch every time on its own without getting bored. I can't comment on Team Fortress 2, as I stopped playing PC games online at the time due to all the aimbotting. Not quite sure what that is. I was seeing in other games. Do you know what aimbotting is, Jordan?
Yeah, that's where they run some sort of program that automatically makes their person face the target, and you can just shoot the gun and it automatically hits the player. Oh, if you're playing a game with aimbotting happening in it, you see the players running around with their heads and their arms and their guns at strange angles to the opposite way they're going. So it's really obvious, you know, that they're using an external program to help them actually hit their target.
That sounds deeply annoying.
Oh, yes. But, you know, people accuse everyone of cheating anyway, even if they're not. But, I mean, aimbotting is normally pretty apparent when you're getting hit from, you know, across the other side of the map and they're not even facing you on. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I think I understand that now, but that doesn't sound too pleasant.
Frugal Game and Scrooge Cast,
thegamerscene.com.
Ninja Fat Pigeon,
Gamer.uk,
Big Red Pigeon.
You don't need to go anywhere else, we have it all here. Buy your games through Frugal Gaming and save a significant amount of cash. Then get down to the communities and play online with friendly and respectful gamers, such as those at the Ninja Fat Pigeons. To find out more about your games, you can check out Gamerdog and the Gamer Scene, where news and discussion will keep you well informed. And for those who like to dig deep, there's Big Red Potion, where you can get some serious and in-depth analysis of the games that you love.
So addictive. Right, okay, so, as usual, we like to then have a little discussion amongst ourselves. So, I'll ask you strident. So what do you feel? Oh, this is going to be tricky, isn't it? It's not one game, is it? So
no, I think if we go down each one.
Let's start with the most controversial ones. Let's bundle them together. So let's start with the three Half-Life games. So what do you feel is the main strength of those games?
Well, I mean, before I go into Half-Life 2, I should just say that I really tried to give it a chance. I mean, I've just been flicking back through my Xbox Live achievement list, and I'm looking, I've like obviously started the game in October 2007, and then I've got some more achievements in December 2007, and then some more in August 2008, then February 2009, September 2009, and then my latest batch now. So it's one that, because everyone says it's so brilliant, it's one that I've kept trying to go back to and play through. The strengths. Well, actually, I think it's graphically quite good, even though it's an old game. The graphics are a little bit deceptive, actually. I think they hide the true age of the game. The plot itself is quite interesting. I think it has a strong start, Half-Life 2, when you wander at a train station and you go and meet all your friends and your buddies from the previous game. So I think it starts out sort of well. I think mainly the actual storytelling in the first game is the strong point. There's not an awful lot else I actually like in the first game. I mean, in the later episodes, there's more that I actually like, but in that first game, I like the story, and I felt that it took me a long time to get the next chunk of story and find out what was going on. Because it's like one great big long journey. You get a little chunk of story, and then you spend ages either walking or driving somewhere and shooting people on the way, and those sections are just a little bit too long.
I suppose, just talking about Half-Life 2 then, and talking about its strengths, I have to, I'm much like you, I think we really needed some people to come on here who've had a better relationship with these games over the years. If I go all the way back to the original Half-Life, which, when did that come out? 1999, something like that, 2000 maybe? Not quite sure when it was, but I bought that on the PC. At the time, I was a fairly keen PC gamer, and I never really liked it. Everyone told me how great it was, and I tried and tried and tried again. I must have played that game, I don't know, a dozen times maybe, and never ever got on with it. And kind of in hindsight, when I think about it, the main problem I had with it is I don't buy into the fiction. And I think the problem, the thing with, certainly with the original Half-Life, was that if you didn't buy into the fiction, I think actually a lot of the gameplay was pretty paper thin. Now, when I tried Half-Life 2 originally, like yourself, in 2007, I had a look at my achievements, and I got so far in, I got past that train station and a bit further, and I found it the most miserable experience ever. And I've tried, I think, three times since then, and again recently, to do it again, and I don't know what it is about it, but it just completely rubs me up the wrong way, and it's really hard to put your finger on it, isn't it? And the only thing I would say is that I would say as a strength is at least it does have a distinct look and feel. When you see it, you instantly know it's Half-Life. That's as good as I can give it, I think.
Yeah, I was the same as you. I mean, I was going through it. I mean, I thought I'd played about 20 hours of it when I loaded it up for replay. So I was very surprised to see that my in-game timer said like 5 hours. I'm thinking, I've played more than 5 hours, but it's because I kept doing the same sections again and again. But I think I played at least another 3 hours or so and got at least a halfway. And just trying to work out what it is that I don't actually like. And I think, like you said, that if the environment is just so depressing, and it's quite ordinary, really. I'm not a fan of the aliens. I don't really like the design. And I just felt really disconnected from the whole game. I don't know if it's just because Gordon doesn't have any hands or doesn't talk or whatever, but I just felt really disconnected from the whole experience, especially when you get to places like, I mean, talk about games like Mirror's Edge for bad first-person platforming. I mean, Half-Life 2, you have to do an awful lot of jumping from box to box and climbing up things, which is really difficult to judge from the first-person perspective. Yeah, I got to the point with Half-Life 2 where I thought, everyone says it's brilliant, which I can accept and I can see how it's very important, but I think it's best if it and me just part company there and I move on to the other parts of the actual box.
Yeah, I think much the same. So, I don't know where else to go with it, really. I mean, when we talk about its weaknesses, I think there are a lot of fundamental problems with it, actually. And I don't buy into the, oh, well, it's an old game, they were all like that. Because you've got to remember, Half-Life 2 came out three years after Halo.
Yeah.
And Halo kind of completely changed the genre in many ways. Half-Life 2 is often held up as this sort of example of great interactive storytelling. I actually think it's appallingly bad. Particularly the episodes 1 and 2, which I've been led to believe, and I got a lot further through episode 1 than I have episode 2. I mean, I got a fair distance in that, but I just found the story tends to be clumsy at the worst, because you have to have this companion running around with you explaining everything as you go. There's nothing clever about that. I don't know, I just the kind of arguments I see for it, I can never see, and all I can ever see are the problems with it. And like I said earlier, I think that's mainly a problem with the fact that I don't like the fiction. So I don't like you, I don't like the aliens, I didn't like the original story in Half-Life, the first game. I don't generally like that sort of science fiction anyway. And I think that's part of the problem. I think if you're really into the fiction, you tend to overlook some of the problems with it. And I also found the kind of problem-solving, puzzle-solving in it to be just constant switch puzzles.
or stacking things up and down.
Yeah.
Which is really fiddly. I mean, there's some interesting physics stuff, but it would be better as a standalone puzzle game rather than in a shooter, I think.
Yeah, possibly. Perhaps that's what it is. Perhaps it's an expectation thing as well. But to give me a good example if anyone's just sampled some of these games, they would have found. But the beginning of episode 1, you have this series of things which are basically tutorials, aren't they? You have to jump over a crack and climb up something and duck under something. It's the usual thing. And then the dog thing appears. And ultimately, what the dog's going to want you to do is get in this car and it throws you over the ravine. But there's nothing. There's no. Nothing telling you what's going on. You've basically got to wander around aimlessly until that scripted event happens. And I've got the silly woman barking in my ear, "Do something, Gordon. How are we going to get across there, Gordon?" And I'm wandering around thinking, well, what am I supposed to do? And I'm running around, and I must have spent 10 minutes just wandering round and round until I hit the pixel that was required for that dog thing to suddenly appear and do his thing. And I thought, there's nothing clever about this. Just to me, that then put me in the wrong mood. And then shortly after that, there was a point where I kept falling and dying. And when I respawned, I would instantly fall and die again. And I must have been falling and dying constantly for about 20 minutes. with her shouting out, "Look out, Gordon," before I actually realised that it was something hitting me on the head.
Yes.
I thought, you know...
There's a lot of that, isn't there? Because there's a lot of... The game relies on you to be looking in the right direction at key points, and I'm always really awful at that. I must admit, I liked episode 1, but the start really got me in a bad mood when I had that stupid Daggett thing lumbering around. And I mean, you can't insult Alex, I think, because I think there's too many people and we'll be on some sort of hit list if we start insulting Alex. But she's wandering around with her infinite bullet gun, wielding her EMP gizmo like it's some sort of sonic screwdriver. I mean, why she can't give that to me so I can actually get on with a job in hand, I don't know. But that lift sequence, yeah, with the debris falling on you, I don't know if it's just me, but I found it really hard to knock that out of the way.
Well, it's you and me, because I had the same problem. So again, I think maybe we're just wired differently, I don't know. But Yeah, and then I had the similar problem to what Stewie described, where I reached a point where I think I had 2 health, and to go beyond that point, I would always take a little bit of damage. It's impossible to avoid, and I would die and instantly respawn just before it again. So, basically meaning it was impossible to continue. It just feels to me, again, you can kind of look at these things and say, well, they're old games, but Episode 1 isn't that old, and Episode 2 was new when the Orange Box came out. So I just feel that some of the design decisions in it, and in particular, it feels to me like it hasn't been playtested properly, or it's been playtested by people who understand, who know Half-Life.
You know, well, that's their audience, isn't it? People are really into it and really, really good at that type of game. I mean, there was a lot I liked in Episode 1. I quite liked shutting down a reactor, even though bouncing the energy balls and stuff was a little bit fiddly. There were some... It was quite well-paced, and it had nice little sections strung together to make a nice little self-contained package. It did get a bit familiar at one point. I was wandering around, and there was all these zombies, and I'm going through a parking garage, or garage as we call it, and then going out into the street, and then I went to a safe house, and then I'm going through a hospital. I'm thinking, now I've played a game like this recently. I'm thinking, this is really a lot like Left 4 Dead, this whole section.
Yeah. Okay, well, I think we've ripped out pieces, and I'm sure people will disagree. And if you do disagree, do leave your reasons and comments in the forum so that I can try and understand where you're coming from. But yeah, I think you and I had similar experiences with it. So let's move on to the other two games. Let's move on to Team Fortress. Now, I did see that in a post recently you've been playing a lot of this, Jordan.
Yeah, I mean, I originally played a fair bit on the 360 version, but I've been playing a lot for the PC version later on. I mean, Team Fortress 2 is really like, I suppose some people in the PC community would say it was like the ultimate multiplayer game, because it's got something like 9 different classes that you can switch between as you like during the game, lots of different types. It's all team-based. It's not like single-player deathmatch, so it's all capture the flag, capture certain points. But just for whole breadth of a different type of character classes, there's something in that game for everyone to be able to play, no matter how rubbish you are. I mean, if you can't shoot for toffee, you can play a heavy who sort of is this really slow-moving but quite heavily armoured guy with a minigun that shoots bullets out everywhere, and you're bound to kill someone that way. Or there's a flamethrower guy, if you can't shoot, or if you're really rubbish like me, you can spend ages like playing a medic, which you just basically go around and heal everybody else. But there's all sorts of defensive and attacking classes, as well as support classes like engineers that can build guns and stuff. It's just a really well thought out and pretty well balanced multiplayer game.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think my favourite game in the package was Team Fortress 2, and it's a shame that we didn't manage to get a game to happen this month. I know we tried a couple of times, but I played a little bit with randoms sort of early this month, but I had played a lot of it when it first came out and for some months after that. And I'm not a huge fan of multiplayer first person shooters. I tend to prefer things with a lot more co-op or sort of objective based. But what I really liked about this is that the teamwork in this game seemed to work even on the consoles. You know, it's very rare if you actually get in a game where people didn't work together, even with randoms. And like you said, the balance between the classes is excellent. And depending on how you like to play, you could nearly always find a class for you. I mean, I mainly played as the kind of grenadier. I can't remember what his class is. I think that might be what his class is. Or the medic, like you said, the support classes, really. Really enjoyed it. Yeah, really enjoyed it.
I mean, if you find when you're in a game that you find you're getting creamed playing one class, then you just switch to something else, and you can normally find something that'll, you know, you're comfortable in the actual game. I mean, the whole issue, though, in terms of Team Fortress 2, I was actually quite surprised how easy it was to get a game on the 360 version, because the 360 version and the PC version, they've sort of diverged. So the 360 version is pretty much as it was at launch, minus a few bugs, the same maps. Everyone's playing that Fort map, which is the only one people seem to play on the 360 most of the time. But Valve have done an awful lot of work on the PC version of the game. They've changed, well, they've tweaked all the classes, and they've introduced different objects that you can pick up, you randomly get awarded on the PC version. And you slot those in place of one of your standard weapons or objects. So, for example, if you're a pyro with a big flamethrower, you can pick up different types of flamethrowers. So, but it's still well balanced, because you might get a better flamethrower, but no matter how good the flamethrower is, it still has a disadvantage. So, for example, I might pick up a flamethrower that does more damage to somebody when they're turning the opposite way to me. But they strip out the ability to reflect bullets and bombs with a flamethrower. Or if I'm a spy, I might pick up a watch that allows me to play dead. But to equip that, I've got to get rid of my invisibility power. So everything sort of slots into the existing slots and maintains the balance, which is quite amazing. So you as a new player can be playing against people who've got all these weird and wonderful objects, and yet you're still on a pretty level playing field, which is, it's really quite some accomplishment to actually keep everything balanced like that.
What do you think is the reason that these enhancements haven't made their way to the 360 or even the PS3 version?
Well, the PS3 version's a sort of separate issue, because it was farmed out to an external developer, and Valve are notoriously a bit down on the PS3 anyway, although I think they'll change their mind on that. There's all these sort of rumours in the past that Microsoft said, yeah, you can put all these enhancements and all these downloadable maps on, but you've got to charge for them. And Valve said, well, we want to make them free. So there's a sort of impasse there. I mean, I'm not quite sure how much of that I believe. I mean, I do believe that Microsoft will have said to them, yeah, you've got to charge for them. But, I mean, just put them up and charge for them. I don't really see that as an issue.
It's like saying, you know, we don't want money. I mean, what's the whole reason for making them is to get people to either buy more copies of the game or play it more.
I mean, the way a console community's supported is different to the PC. You've got to give the PC a lot more for free, because they're making a lot of stuff and keeping that game alive for you. Somebody's got to pay on the console for the bandwidth, for all those downloads and for all that sort of thing. And I know you could argue that there's lots included in your Xbox Live annual fee, but I don't know. I don't know why they haven't put these improvements in. There was the thought that they were trying to get it all finished so that they could release it as a decent, chunky pack. But I've not really heard anything of that. It's a shame, because it really does add a lot to the game. And I think there was a lot of problems with Team Fortress 2 at launch, that with sort of lag issues that put people off it. So maybe the community isn't there to make it worthwhile releasing the extra stuff on 360 anymore.
Yes, that's a possibility. And also, I've read numerous times that the kind of quality control process on Xbox Live is pretty strict, and you know, I know a lot of developers and software houses find it quite frustrating to deal with them. I heard the Darwinia guy saying that I think it took them an extra 6 months to get it onto the Xbox Live Arcade because of all the thousands of tests that Microsoft make them do, which as a consumer I don't think is a bad thing, but
well, you should just chuck it on the PS3. I think you can get away with a lot more. Well, if Heavy Rain's anything to go by.
Yes, definitely, if Heavy Rain's anything to go by, yeah. I think that puts a lot of off, because obviously it's more cost, isn't it? So if you're going to have to invest, you know, 25 people working for 6 months on releasing some content, you're only going to charge a few quid for, and as you said, if the community's not there, then it no longer becomes viable.
Well, I'm sure that Microsoft also requires the developer to pay for it to go through Microsoft's QA, don't they? So if they want to put it up for free, they're not... Somebody has to pay for that QA process, even on the free content. Microsoft won't look at it in their QA department for free, will they, sir?
No,
the money's got to come from somewhere.
Yeah, that's right, because they have their own testers, so they outsource them out. So yeah, you have to pay for them. Yeah, which is a pity, isn't it? Because again, the launch, like you said, destroyed a lot of the goodwill that the game had. I do remember those lag issues, and it was almost unplayable, wasn't it, for several weeks. Yeah, so that's probably a good example of what not to do when you release a multiplayer game.
Yeah, and I think they were very bad at getting the message out that it was fixed, because if you talk to people now, they still say, oh, isn't it really laggy on the 360? And I've got to say that I've had no issues like that for a long, long time, so I don't think they got the message out that they'd actually remedied any of the problems that they originally had.
Yeah, it's a shame. The other thing I thought was really good about Team Fortress 2 is it did go for a completely different aesthetic. It went for that kind of 3D cartoony comic book vibe, which works. You know, that works really well for me. That kind of look, because it sort of implies that what you're doing is more fun than it is. It's not some gritty, grey, nasty horribleness like Killzone 2. It's more comic book, more light-hearted, less, I don't know, just less in your face. And that I really enjoyed about it. And even to the point where you've kind of got the announcements, haven't you? And you've also got the little quips that come up every time you get killed, particularly if you've got the same person killing you all the time. Yeah, it's just really, really good fun.
Yeah, but like the big fanfares when you're really being dominated by another player. And, you know, a lot of the extra weapons and stuff they've added are quite cartoony, so it is like a great big... You almost think it's like Team Fortress 2 produced by Acme Industries or whatever. You expect the Roadrunner to go zooming past you as you're playing.
Yeah, it's also almost like Wacky Races, isn't it, but with the guns. Yeah, so I think that's quite a bold move, and again, maybe that's not to everyone's taste today. Everyone seems to want to go for these pseudo-militaristic... grimy, horrible, first-person shooters, and maybe that aesthetic just doesn't appeal to.
Certainly does seem to be the case on the consoles. I mean, the PC, on the PC, there's thousands of servers and thousands of people playing it. You know, I can go on any time of day and have really decent ping servers really close to me with loads of people on. It seems to be extremely popular. I mean, I don't know how many people have paid for it, but I imagine it's quite a few, because it's all linked to your Steam account and all locked down. And Valve also have chucked in, there's like 326 or something like achievements you can get in the PC version for all sorts of different types of kills and all sorts of different types of play styles for each class. So it'll really keep you busy if you're into that sort of thing as well.
Yeah. I think, for me anyway, Team Fortress 2 is definitely the diamond in the package, and it sounds like on the PC even more so. So, a great game, and a shame that it doesn't get more love on the consoles that it ought to, really. Now, the final one is one that I think nearly everyone will know now. It's become famous, infamous, I don't know, really. But interestingly, when I do remember before the Orange Box came out, that very few people were talking about it. And it was only when journalists started getting hands on the review copy, and after they'd finished playing Episode 2, that they were discovering this little thing on there, which they thought would be throwaway, was actually... something completely new in many ways, and that's Portal. So how did you get on with Portal second time around?
Well, I should say first that I really enjoyed it first time round, and it was, I think, my favourite part of the box at the time. Second time round, because I mean, to say Portal, it's a sort of puzzly, first-person puzzly game. You shoot portals around, you go through them to come out somewhere else, and that type of thing. When you play it the second time round, it doesn't quite have as much magic, because you sort of know what's going to happen, and you sort of know how to do most of the puzzles, until you get later on and you think, did I look on Game Facts for this one? But yeah, it's not quite as good second time round. I mean, I don't think that's necessarily such a bad thing, because... you know, there's certain movies and certain books that you read that only have a huge impact on you when it's brand new. I mean, things like Usual Suspects or something, or Fight Club. You can never watch it again for the first time. And I think Portal is a sort of video game equivalent of that. You can never play Portal for the first time, a second time. But yeah, I still enjoyed it, but there wasn't really anything driving me through to get to the end again, so I only played about an hour or so of Portal second time round.
Again, much the same. It must be our age, Stroy.
It must be.
And family commitments. But yeah, the same thing here. I probably got about... I'm trying to think how many levels there are now. It's like 15 or 16, isn't it? Or something like that. I think I got to about 6 or 7. And yeah, every single one I got to, I thought, yeah, I know how to do this. I remember this.
Yeah, I tell you what, second time round, that GLaDOS's voice is so annoying. Do not remember it being as annoying first time round, but second time it's like, oh, tone down the treatment on that voice.
I think it's because you're paying more attention to it because you know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Because in the first game, I kind of ignored her until the twist towards the end, and it was like, oh right, okay. And I kind of wished then that I'd, you know, recorded or tried to remember everything she'd said to me. And you're right, second time round, you're paying much more attention to what she does because you know what's coming. Like you said, you can't play it again for the first time, can you? So you're probably not supposed to. Well, you know, you probably wouldn't pay too much attention had you not known the role that she then plays. I much the same really. I do have such great memories of playing it the first time. And in some ways, I think playing it again just started to highlight to me some of the problems I have with Half-Life. And I guess they're probably engine-related, but I started getting quite frustrated with the way it controls and the way that she sort of skates around the floor. But then you find out in all Valve games, it's the same in Left 4 Dead. I still think the ideas in that really shine. And some of the conceits, you know, like the companion cube, are still, you know, such a clever little thing to put in there that has almost, you know, become a cultural icon in its own right, you know, and it's not many games that are able to do that.
I mean, people do complain that it's a bit short, but I think, you know, occasionally games should be allowed to be short, and it doesn't outstay its welcome, really. It's just the right sort of length. And, you know, you could drag it out for 20 hours like Half-Life 2 or whatever, but it would just all be filler. So let's have some more short, little, great little experiences like Portal.
I totally agree. I think it's the perfect length. In fact, if you were to... It's the kind of same in the cinema, you know, a lot of films these days, like Avatar, you know, being 2 hours 40 minutes long. That film didn't need to be 2 hours 40 minutes long. It needed to be an hour shorter. You know, there's an hour of filler. And you find out with a lot of games, you know, where they put backtracking and or crappy collection quests in it, or you know the sort of thing, or token finding or something like that. When you don't need it, if I've played for 5 or 6 hours and I've really enjoyed it, then I've had my money's worth. I agree. I thought it was a perfect length, really, and particularly puzzle games. I think if they outstay their welcome, then they kind of defeats the object of the game. But, so I suppose I have to ask you, did you enjoy playing these games again?
Yes, I did. I especially enjoyed going back to Team Fortress 2, because I don't think I'd really given it as much time as it deserved. And I'm quite fancy having that in my regular rotation of occasional PC gaming. Obviously didn't like Half-Life 2, but I'm glad that I decided to quit playing that and go on to episode 1, because I really did enjoy that in the end. I thought that was a nice little episode, and I might even work my way through episode 2, because I think I'm a couple of hours into that so far. I would definitely recommend anybody pick it up the pack who hasn't got it, but I would imagine most people have had it in their possession at one point or another.
And it's pretty cheap on my little saute into Canterbury. You see, I did see it in GameStation for £7. So, yeah, I think it's an absolute bargain if you've never played any of those games, or even just to play Portal and Team Fortress, I think. I did enjoy going back and playing a little bit more of Team Fortress. It's just a shame that wasn't able to play it with a group of friends, really. I think the last time I played it with a group was when we played it as a Monday night classic game about a year ago on the Gamer Scene. I agree with you. I certainly will keep hold of it, and occasionally we'll chuck Team Fortress 2 in just to see what's going on, really, and maybe either we'll have a game of that in the future. So let's move on to the nominations then. So last month we had so many games, we then ended up with a lot of votes to make sure we had a winner, and the runner up last month was, well, it's pretty close actually, but the runner up was Rainbow Six Vegas with 18% of the vote, quickly followed by Dead Rising and Splinter Cell, and I'm sure those two games will come up again, but carrying forward to the vote this month will be Rainbow Six Vegas, which is available on all high definition formats. So Strident, what's your nomination going to be and why?
I'm going to put up this month Bully Scholarship Edition, just because I think it's the perfect sort of game for a replay. It's not hugely long. It's one that a lot of people didn't pick up at the time and play, and I think it's one that you can just play for a few hours and get quite a bit from it. If you haven't looked at it before, just a bit of background. It was like a port of an old PlayStation 2 game. Basically, it's set around a school. It's an open world sandbox. Well, it's not really sandbox, but that's the term people use for these type of games. A sandbox game, a sort of Grand Theft Auto type game, but with school kids. A bit like the Harry Potter games, if anybody's played those. Well, I know it's probably just me.
And me. Yeah.
But, I mean, it's, to be honest, it's the type of game I thought, I'm not going to like this, because I'm not really into all this sort of American bullies and preppy crowd type thing, but it's actually quite an enjoyable little experience, really. I've got quite a lot of points out of that, so I'd be going back to it having played it to completion, but yeah, it's a good game.
If that wins, I'm going to pick that up on the Wii, actually, because the Wii had different sort of motion control mini games on it. So, and I think it had a different mini games as well for some of the lessons. So, I think that might be quite interesting to compare them. And as you said, it's a PlayStation 2 game anyway, so it's not exactly gonna look any worse on the Wii. I like yourself. I play through it. Funny enough, I actually played Bully about a year after it came out. So, played it quite late, and my wife was playing it quite recently. So it's one I've, you know, wouldn't mind going back to at all. My vote is going to be for The Club, or my nomination, I should say, is going to be for The Club. So The Club was an interesting game that was created by Bizarre Creations, who made all the Project Gotham racing games and are the studio behind the upcoming racing game Blur, which is out very shortly, and also who brought us Geometry Wars Retro Evolved. And the interesting thing about The Club is that it's a third-person shooter, which is done in the kind of vein of it being a sort of bloody game show. But it uses a lot of the concepts taken from Project Gotham Racing. So it uses the kudos system and a kind of reward system based on the stylishness of the kills that you do. The reason that I thought it would be a good one to play is that I recently started playing Mad World on the Wii, and that just reminded me a lot of the Club. There's quite a lot of similarities between the two, in that the points you score are based on the type of takedowns or kills that you get. The other good thing about The Club is that, again, it was kind of, a lot of it's very tongue-in-cheek and quite rewarding, and I certainly, you know, was one of the shooters that I've actually enjoyed playing the most, actually. I've seen it, it's actually pretty cheap, so again, it's another good one to pick. So that's The Club. Now, I think The Club was only on the 360, I'm not quite sure. I'll have to check, actually. I'll have a quick check now. Did you play The Club at all, Strident?
No, I didn't. I heard a lot about it at the time. There was certainly quite a few mixed views, whether people either loved it or hated it. But it's certainly one I'd definitely like to have a go at.
Right, I can confirm it's 360, PC and PlayStation 3. And again, it's published by Sega, much like Mad World. So they obviously go for similar types of games. And it is available on Steam as well, according to this Wikipedia page. So yeah, so that's my nomination. That's the club. So just three games in next month's vote then. So Rainbow Six Vegas on all the HD platforms, the club or the same, and Bully. I'm guessing that's available on all of them as well. Right, so that just leads me to remind you how to get involved. First of all, if you have any opinions on the Orange Box, then do feel free to visit the forum at www.thegamerscene.com. Look for the Orange Box thread. If you'd like to contest any of the views that Strident and I have, I'm sure you will, and then please do on there. Also, if you've got any fond memories of 2001 and some of those games we spoke about at the beginning, again, please leave a comment or any of your stories and tales on there. We'd love to read them. As for this month, then the poll will go up tonight and will be available for 7 days for you to vote for the club Rainbow Six Vegas or Bully. Again, the poll will be on the forum at www.thegamerscene.com. Do check back if you do vote, and pick up the game if you don't already have it, so you can take part. If you're looking for good places to find second-hand games, then all the usual outlets normally have them. I don't think any of these will be too hard to find. So that's eBay. Obviously, your High Street Game or Game Station may have used copies or older new copies. Play.com's trade and Amazon.co.uk used are pretty reliable, and also Love Film tend to have, not only can you rent them, they often sell off old ex-rental copies as well, so they're often a good cheap source of games. If you'd like to be on the podcast next month, we'd love to have you to talk about the winning game. You can get involved by either emailing feedback@thegamerscene.com using the subject replay, or you can contact myself or Ditz directly, either via the forum or on Twitter. So we're at Twitter/Xantiriad or Twitter/Ditz. And if you want to leave comments on either the show or the game you're playing, and you want those to be read out on future podcasts, then again, you can either do so on the forum or you can leave them on Twitter using the hashtag TGSReplay. So all it leaves me to do is to, first of all, thank Strident for coming today.
Have you thank
got
you.
any plugs or shout-outs that you want to make?
Not really, but I will say that we were talking earlier about filler in games and extending them longer than they need to be, and I was just listening this morning to the latest Big Red Potion, which was all about grinding. So if you want to hear some chat about things like filler and grinding and games being extended beyond what they maybe need to, maybe check out Big Red Potion. Also a shout out to Alex and Tony at the Digital Cowboys, who have just done a great big gamer score-a-thon, 24 hours of playing Xbox 360 games to try and reach a target of gamer score. So it sounds more like fun to me than some sort of sponsored thing, but I think they've raised quite a bit for Medicine Without Frontiers as well, so well done to them.
Yeah, I second that, and I had a look this morning actually. I think it's over £1,000 now that charity's raised, so that's great, isn't it, that you can spend 24 hours playing games and raise a bit of money as well. It's fantastic, really. And I second that. Do check out some of the other UGN podcasts, like The Gamer Dork and Big Red Potion and the Ninja Fat Pigeons, if we ever get round to making another one. and obviously Frugal Gaming as well. That's probably it, really. So thanks again, and please do vote, play and join in, and I hope you will join us all again next month.